Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Well, hello and happy weekend. Welcome to another edition of Focus on Community. I'm Frank Rush. Nice to have you along. By the way, don't forget, if you miss any part of today's program or you sit back and go, what'd they say? You can always go back and listen to it. It'll be posted on our website as a podcast. You can either stream it or download it and listen to it whenever you'd like. Our guest today is Indiana House Representative for District 43. That's our area right here. Tanya Paff joins us. How you doing?
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
So your district basically encompasses Vigo County, obviously. How big is it and what's in your area?
So my district is basically pretty much the city of Terre Haute. So I go all the way west to the state line, and I go north up to Park Avenue, and I go east, I have Seeleyville, and then I go south down to Margaret. So I'm pretty much the center of Terre Haute.
And, of course, that could change in this legislative session coming up because redistricting is going to be one of the big topics, right?
Oh, absolutely. So the census numbers, we're hearing a lot of things, but the census numbers, typically they come out to the states in beginning or middle of April. And we're because of the pandemic, which has, of course, affected all aspects of our lives, the numbers are running behind. So, but when we get the numbers, the maps will all be redrawn again. And, I mean, I could have a new district. I could have the same district. I mean, at this point, no one knows.
Now, the redistricting, of course, is a big point of contention between you and your fellow Democrats and the Republicans who have supermajorities in the Senate and the House. How do folks on your side of the fence feel about the redistricting? I mean, let's face it, you get a say, but you don't, in a way.
Well, sure. So currently in the House, there's 71 Democrats as of this last election November, and I'm sorry, 71 Republicans and 29 Democrats. So when you start look at districting, I don't believe that 71% of Indiana is Republican. It's a little closer to the middle, hovering around the 50s. So on our side, you know, we contend that, you know, it's better to draw more fairer representation so that we have better bills. Because, you know, the way the process works is whoever's in charge gets to basically write and make the bills, and then the other party helps if they're allowed to, right? So the purpose of redistricting, I myself would, you know, I'm pushing for a nonpartisan redistricting where, and that's hard to find, and I understand that, but there are ways to do it where we draw the lines so that it's just a more fair system. Now, of course, you'll hear people say, well, you know, if the Democrats are in charge, they draw their own lines, and if the Republicans are in charge, they draw their own lines because, you know, you want to be the supermajority, right?
So, sure.
But our side definitely is focused on getting things a little more fair.
Well, and let's face it, it's nothing to be ashamed of. That's just human nature. The fact we're all there for our own self-interest. if you've got your hand on the reins of power, then that's pretty much what's going to happen. But still, it would be nicer to have things maybe a little bit more fair. Is there anything that the Democrats can do to try to persuade otherwise, other than just ask and see what happens?
You know, I think public comments are a big part of this. You know, for me, government should represent the people. So if the people aren't happy with this, what people can do is contact, you know, their representatives, their senators, the governor, and push for, you know, a collective, hey, this isn't right with the way we've been doing this. Let's change this. Let's make the districts more fair. Because, you know, sometimes the way the lines are drawn is you have a district that's 65% Republican and 35% Democrat. Well, there's mathematically, there's really no way a Democrat could ever win that district just based on the numbers because it's just math, right?
Sure.
So I think just public knowledge and people paying attention, and also redistricting happens just once every 10 years. So when these lines are drawn and these new districts are formed, you're looking at these districts will be the same mathematically for the next 10 years. And so I just think public awareness And if people care, then they need to reach out and contact the governor, the legislature, and just talk about it and say, hey, you know, we just need pressure, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
When we talk about District 43, Terre Haute has traditionally for many, many years been Democrat. So was your district pretty much drawn to be a Democrat district and just like some of the others are drawn to be Republican districts, do you think?
Absolutely. Yes. So I am in a gerrymandered Democrat district. And there are some that exist around the state, and I'm in one of them. And even saying that, if they redraw my district so that it's, you know, 50-50, I personally think that's better. Because, again, I think it's so important to have a fair competition.
Mm. Now, of course, we have no idea what's going to happen in the future. But if they do redraw your district and make it a little bit more even, well, you saw the election that just happened. There was more Republican right. votes in Vigo County, I think, than has happened ever in my lifetime. So
I agree.
You
I
know,
agree.
So is would that be something that would be of concern to you?
Concern? No. You know, I mean, let's just say that it's drawn 50-50. I'll run again, and I'll do my best. And if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. I mean, it's just politics, right? But saying that, it would take a huge effort for this redistricting commission to do that. So mm-hmm. I would love it if it's 50-50. You know, I've always been competitive, so, you know, I would just campaign and run again.
Representative Tanya Paff's our guest today. So let's talk about the upcoming legislative session. What bills are you most interested in? Are there any bills that you yourself are carrying? And what are you hoping for this upcoming session?
So I'll just kind of quickly go, I think, what's going to kind of be topmost, and then I'll focus on mine.
Okay.
So it's a long session. It's a four-month one. So, of course, the number one priority, and really the only priority besides redistricting, is the budget. So, you know, we had a really nice surplus, a good cushion in Indiana. And, of course, during COVID, we had to spend a lot of it. So there's going to be a huge discussion on, you know, should we rebuild the surplus up to where it was, or should we invest in, you know, healthcare, schools, teachers? So that's going to be pretty much the only thing most people are talking about. You know, healthcare is such an important part, and I think COVID has really highlighted that Indiana struggles in that particular area. So we really need to deal with a lot of healthcare issues. And then, of course, there's teacher pay. I'm sure you saw the commission report came out and said what we all knew, if you're a teacher, which I'm a high school math teacher, was that there's a shortage of teachers and we don't get paid well. So, and when we talk about teacher pay, it's teachers from beginning teachers to about year 15. That's the focus. That's the focus group. Old teachers like myself, we're under a different system. You know, we're okay. But, you know, getting people to come into this profession and then stay in this profession is a struggle. When you start off, you graduate from college. You know, my son graduated from college with like $40,000 in debt already, and a starting teacher makes $38,000. It's hard to convince people to go into teaching. So there's that.
You know, I'll stop you right there on the education sure. thing on teachers and pay and that kind of stuff. Like you said, starting teachers in Vigo County make $38,000 a year. And my wife's been teaching, in all fairness and all openness, I'll admit I am married to a teacher in Vigo County. and she's like you. She's under a different pay scale. She makes more money now than any starting teacher will ever make in their career if things stay the way they are. And that is because she's under the previous system. Now, I don't think anybody really thinks that just because you've been there 5 years should mean an automatic pay raise. But by the same token, the way it's set up right now, that's why we're not getting new teachers, is because they're not going to make enough money to pay off their bills. So where's the happy medium there?
Well, I think one of our Democrat representatives suggested that starting salary for teachers at least be $40,000, right, across the state. So if you just start, let's just dream for a second. Everyone starts at least at 40, and then if you're a first-year teacher, you know, you get $1,000 under whatever. Whatever that magic number is, it's not 60, it's not 80, whatever the magic number is, and I quite frankly don't know it, it has to be raised, right? because you just, most of the teachers I know that are in that year 0 to 5, they have two jobs. And, you know, you go to college for 4 years, you study a lot, you go through your student teaching, you're so excited to teach, and then you can't afford to live. So that right there is a problem. Our salaries don't even keep up with inflation.
And on top of that, it doesn't necessarily pay you to be better educated, because it used to be you got bumps for masters and then a doctorate.
Correct.
And you still get a little bit, but it's not nearly what it was. So you're really not money ahead to be better educated and better prepared for your job now.
And you would think the nature of our job education, we would want teachers to go back to school and get more education, right? I mean, that's the whole goal. and the money is just not there. That's not how it works.
Well, we'll see what happens. Okay, so anyway, I had to stop you there for that, but also sure. Coming up in this session.
Oh, and the last one that I was going to talk about is the role of the governor. So ever since the pandemic hit, he has had complete control over all the decisions. And, you know, I think he's done a decent job personally. And I'm not sure I'd want 150 people giving their opinion on every decision that has been made during this pandemic. However, a lot of people in the General Assembly are not happy with not being asked, right? So lots of legislatures across the country have been involved in making decisions, how to use the COVID money, what we do with nursing homes, you know, all kinds of things. And our General Assembly just has been left out. So that will be a really big issue as far as going forward. How do you limit the governor's, power, or do you set it up for next time? So anyway, that'll be a huge discussion going forward.
How would you like to see that? Do you want more limits on what the governor can? Because a lot of folks, it's like this. I mean, he could, as we talk about this shutdown ordeal through the pandemic.
Right.
And he has certain authorities, certain powers to do that. There are limits on it. So do you want to see more limits on that? Do you think that he's got too many? He needs less? Because when you're talking about closing down somebody's livelihood, I mean, let's face it, this gets personal when you could easily make a wrong call here and bankrupt somebody. So how do you think this should play out? Should he get more or less?
I think at the very least, leadership in both the House and the Senate should be involved in some of the bigger decisions, right? So like what you said, you know, do we shut down? And, you know, I have a very good friend who owns a bar, and that's her livelihood. She has sent, you know, everything she has in the last 20 years, and she gets shut down, and all of a sudden, there's a whole livelihood, right? So should that power rest with one person? You know, I think at the very least, the General Assembly, not all 150 of us, but the leadership on both sides, the Democrats, the Republicans, you know, there's a leadership team, they should be involved. So all the money that we got from the CARES Act, the Budget Committee in the House and the Senate, they should be involved in how that money is directed. So to me, it's the very minimum thing. I don't want to take all of his power, okay? But I just think that, you know, there is a legislative body for a reason, and that they should at least be asked.
So what do you think should be the number one priority for the legislature in this upcoming session? I mean, obviously, we've got COVID and we've got the budget and everything else, but what should be the biggest thing that we really focus on to make sure we get done?
That's an interesting question. I'm going to have to go back with the budget just because we have the ability to help so many different facets of Indiana. So let's talk broadband for a second, right? So broadband used to be this privilege that people had, but, you know, it's a necessity now. You know, everyone needs it. Farmers need it. Small businesses need it. Of course, kids and education, where we are flipping to e-learning. So, we can control how the money is spent, and we can boost broadband to help more people. So I think the number one priority is just really taking a look at the budget and how we can use money to to help people in Indiana stop struggling. So, I mean, that's what I would say the number one priority is.
Being an educator, I'm sure you've already run into this firsthand. Vigo County schools have been on remote. You've got students that are either on their Chromebooks or on a machine at home or something like that. I mean, you've been teaching yourself to an empty classroom.
Yes,
so,
I have. Yeah.
So how much problem has our... Vigo County is kind of like really the picture-perfect example of here of what's right and what's wrong with Indiana. In some areas of Vigo County, we've got internet access that matches the best out there. We've got other areas that we barely have landline telephones to. So I'm sure you've run into some problems just in teaching your class throughout this pandemic and with the problems we've had.
Oh, absolutely. And so this girl comes straight to my mind. You know, she was making an A in my class. On the side, so just a little background. In Vigo County, you know, we've done, I think we've done it all. We, at the high school level, we did half the school one day, half the school the other day. And then for a little while, everybody was there. I think that lasted a week. And then we went back to half and half, and then we went completely remote. So this August, we have changed many times, but, you know, my female student, you know, she's making an A in my class. All of a sudden, it's radio silence. I don't hear from her. You know, I'm emailing her, reaching out as much as possible. And about a week and a half later, she finally contacted me and said, I'm sorry, Mrs. Papp, I don't have internet access. And, you know, in order for me to get anything done, I have to be driven somewhere and my parents work. So, you know, you take a kid like that, and as a teacher, because she hasn't turned in anything for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, do you flunk her? I mean, it doesn't exactly seem right. So the inequities in the broadband, I mean, they affect so many aspects of our life that you're right. Vigo County is a microcosm of the state, right? So we need to, as a state, address those issues and make it equitable for everyone.
And that's one of those areas where just having Wi-Fi hotspots on school buses parked in areas around the county or parking lots you can go to or going to the school parking lot, if you can't get to those places, it really doesn't do you any good.
Right. So if you're, I have another student who she's a sophomore and she's in charge of watching her three siblings during the day because both parents work. I mean, these are four, you know, kids that are supposed to be in school, but we're in e-learning, so we're home, so the oldest child has to babysit. Okay, well, the Wi-Fi is gone by the time her parents come home. So again, I mean, I don't think most people think of the ramifications of not having what we need to have as a state.
Well, and hopefully we'll get some of that figured out. But just think of it, too. If those smaller kids are able to sit there with their older sibling and watch your math class, just think how far ahead of everybody else they'd be.
You know? Sure.
Yeah, they'd be doing high school algebra in fifth grade. It'd be great. So.
Well, you know, that is a good point. You know, if anyone's bored, they could always watch my math lessons. And there you go.
Oh, I'm not sure I could do those. I had a hard time when I was in school, and that was a long time ago. I did okay with algebra. Geometry, oh, it was a nightmare. As a matter of fact, I even had, and I went to North, where you're at. He's no longer right with us. Emmett Tyler was my geography geometry teacher, and he told me, he said, you just don't get this, do you? No.
He was a wise man, by the way.
Yeah, he was. And I told him, I said, no, you're right. The algebra thing, I'm okay. So, and he said, that's okay. He said, we're going to get you through this. Then you don't have to worry about it. So, and I made it through barely. But Tanya Paff, who is
look how successful you are now. So
yeah,
there we go.
And I will say, I don't necessarily use geometry so much, but I do use math in what I do, especially figuring time. Everything we do is on time. And I learned how to add and subtract in base 60 a long time ago. So District 43, Democrat representative for the Indiana House, which covers the Terre Haute area, Tanya Paff, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it. And we'll keep in touch with you at the upcoming legislative session and see how things go. That's all we've got time for. If you missed any part of today's program, again, posted for you as a podcast on our website. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-4200. 2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.